TED Audio Collective.
So, Frances, here's something I've been thinking about. As leaders, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do the right things and have the right answers. And in many situations, asking the right questions is far more important.
Oh, yeah. If we ask the right questions, we increase the likelihood that we're going to get to the real problem because it allows people to explore the area and navigate the area.
Yeah. And I ran into this quote from Albert Einstein, smart dude, that was super provocative on this front, which is some version of, if I had an hour to solve a problem, I would spend the first 55 minutes determining the right questions to ask.
That's everything.
Which would allow me to solve the problem in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it seems very aligned with the way you move through the world.
Yeah.
Where that speed is the payoff at the end of that kind of deliberation.
Yeah. So we were recently brought in because a company said, we have a gender problem. Will you help us fix the gender problem? And so we could have come in with all of the solutions for how to fix a gender problem, what we call our gender toolkit. And what we found out by asking a series of questions within the first hour, so within Albert Einstein's hour, what we found out is they didn't have a gender problem at all. They had a communication problem. And we got there by asking people, is there anything that you're experiencing? And we asked women because they said they had a gender problem. We asked, is there anything you're experiencing that is just a small nick in your dignity throughout the day?
Mm-hmm.
That question uncovered what the real problem was, which is that they were being communicated with, everybody was being communicated with in a really brutally aggressive way.
Yeah, it was not just the women in the company.
It had nothing to do with gender. It had to do with the two founders really liked aggressively, brutally aggressive communication. And so out of respect, they treated other people as they liked to be treated, which we, of course, know is the wrong thing to do.
Super powerful example. This is Fixable. I'm Anne Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School, and I'm Anne's wife.
On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast. Anything is fixable, and solutions are often just a single conversation away.
Today, we'll be having a conversation with someone we're calling Bree. And Bree left us this very interesting voicemail.
Let's hear it.
Hi, Anne and Frances. I'm a former creative director and current Pilates instructor. I also own a company that I accidentally created with my business partner. It's actually a fitness equipment company, which is a huge plot twist on my life since I can't even put together IKEA equipment. We have a patent, we have manufacturing and distribution, and we've sold it worldwide. The problem is that it's not my wheelhouse. I totally believe in it and won't give up on it. But I would like it to go on to someone who knows what they're doing better, someone with resources, someone who's good at schmoozing, someone who's good at sales, all things that I'm not good at. I'm really good at watching serial killer documentaries, and I need to get back to what I'm good at doing. Can you help?
Wow, this is going to be a good conversation. I feel like this is going to be a conversation, Frances, where asking the right questions is going to be really important.
Yeah, and she has a problem that is, what do I do in my presence so that the company is prepared for my absence? And that is a few good questions away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Bree, welcome to Fixable. We're so thrilled to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what we want to do today, we want to get to know you a little better, and then the three of us are going to get into the sandbox of trying to be helpful to you today and see if we can't co-produce a solution and send you off in a state of enthusiasm to solve your problem and with some actionable things on your list. How does that sound as a game plan?
I wish you the best of luck.
That's all we need. That's all, and we like a little skepticism because it's motivating. So let's get into it. You've invented a very cool product,
Thank you.
What we can tell. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
So it is a combination of a couple of different Pilates pieces of equipment. The one that I would compare it most closely to is a Pilates tower and stall bars.
And you're talking to someone who's been very intimidated by the space because they all feel like...
It's scary looking, right?
They're scary looking. The names of these instruments are scary
looking,
sounding.
Honestly. Yeah, ours is the scariest, might be the scariest looking one of all. But it solves a couple of problems in the Pilates industry is that most Pilates equipment is very large. And as I'm sure you know, real estate, the number one expense is space. So we wanted to make something that you could have a piece of equipment that could do resistance exercises and things like that, but that didn't take up all of this space. So instead of having something that you did mostly lying down, we did something that you did mostly standing up, which also solves another problem in sort of two aspects of Pilates. One is that Pilates is mostly done lying down. We always say you don't get to stand up in Pilates until you're pretty advanced. But obviously, people need to be doing standing exercises and balance exercises and things like that. And I have a specialty working with neurological conditions. And definitely people with neurological conditions need to be working on exercises that are standing, that are gait-based exercises. So it was a product that could work for my private clients, but also we could put a whole bunch of them in a room and they wouldn't take up that much space because they only take up literally a little over 3 inches into the room, which is basically nothing. And then like under 3 feet of width of wall space for each one.
That seems like a miracle.
It's right. I thought so as well. And so we created it originally just for ourselves, but then other people were seeing it and they were like, oh, we want this too.
So other studio owners,
Okay. Right. So we did like our first run of 50 and then we sold our first 8 and 8, both in New York City, actually. So then we ended up having people in Europe want them. So then we found a distributor that could do it in Europe. He knew a distributor in Australia. So then we have distribution in Australia and Europe. And
my operations brain is going haywire right now.
In the Middle East. But every time we place an order, our orders have always been 50 to 100. We loved an order of 50. We loved that. But then the factory was like, no, it has to be 100. So, and then, you know, there was COVID and supply chain issues. So all of that also kind of plays into it. But over time, it's had some direct-to-consumer sales. It's had some sales in the rehab space. So we see that we have three potential markets, but the market I know is the Pilates market.
And so Pilates, B2C, and then there's a rehab. These are your kind of three verticals.
Right. Yeah.
So and tell us about the team right now.
Well, the team has actually changed literally as of 2 weeks ago, but it's me and my business partner. So she and I have been working together since 2010. So we've been business partners for a very long time. So we have a really good relationship. I'm the creative/teacher. She's operations. So she handles placing orders, dealing with like import stuff, dealing with shipping, like all of that. She does that. We just brought in a sort of, it's like an accelerator group. So they have web designers and social media advertisers and things like that all within one company. So really it's just myself and my business partner. And then we have this new company that we're working with that is like an accelerator type company.
And then directionally, how is the business going? Just from a demand standpoint, are sales up, flat, down?
It is so flat. It is like the flattest. It's just been flat forever. It's been, you know, for years and years and years now, not, I mean, that sounds like it's been decades, but since we started, you know, we'll sell, like we sold 8 to a new studio in Chicago, and then we sold 2 today. And then we might go days and days with no sales. But the way the business is operating and has always operated is we sell, we use the money to spend on the people that we need to try to grow it. And then we buy new product, rinse, repeat, and we've never paid ourselves, which is, I have to say, it's not a fun way to do business.
Mm-hmm. What is it that you do on a day-to-day basis?
So I always say I get to do the things that are in the creative world that no one else can do. So if there needs to be a blog written, we did have a social media company, but I do some of the social media. We have an online studio with workout videos and just kind of continuing education stuff. So I manage all of that. So I manage all the teachers on it. I edit the videos that go on it. I put them on our site. I let people know they're on our site. So I do lots of little things. I try to stay in the world of things that I feel most competent at, which tends to be teaching. You know, if, like right now I'm working on a rehab training manual for physical therapists so that if PTs buy the product, they would know, like, here's a protocol for working with shoulder injuries or knee injuries or hip replacements or spinal issues or whatever, because I feel like that's the stuff I know how to do. And then I have a lot of meetings about
so many meetings
about stuff I don't know anything about.
On this list that you just described, which of these activities are energizing to you?
Teaching. So any of the sort of teaching people how to use it, teaching people what to do with it, more of the educational stuff, because that's really the kind of things I like, coming up with accessories for it. So that's something that we've added over time. So I'm like, ooh, it would be cool if it could do this. And then I will work with a product designer to make accessories for it. And people have come up with all sorts of cool things that I would never have thought of. And that's why I love our Instagram, because we see that somebody out there was doing something. And I'm like, never thought about turning in that direction and doing that exact same exercise, but that totally changes it. And it's very cool and interesting. But I always feel like in terms of work that I need my creative brain to be fed, and doing what I would consider more mundane business stuff is not something that feeds my creative brain at all. So I do think, you know, what my issue is, it is feeling like I'm failing and feeling like that is partially my fault, that we're not working hard enough. Both my business partner and I are pretty big introverts. And so when we have recommendations of like, oh, you should go to like Schmooze Fest type things, we're like, oh God, it shouldn't be us. Like, we need to find somebody who's like a person that enjoys that kind of stuff who would do it really well.
Francis, okay. Any additional yes. questions?
So I have a couple of diagnostic questions, and then I'd like to summarize where we are. So the sales that's occurring in London, Australia, Middle East, I'm assuming you're not in those places. Like, you're not traveling to London, Australia, and Middle East. So what generates those sales? How do those sales occur?
We have distributors that distribute other Pilates equipment.
And so for those distributors, are those three different distributors or one distributor across countries?
We have three distributors.
Okay.
And we actually have four distributors. Sorry, we have a Canadian distributor.
Okay. So, do you have a U.S. distributor?
We don't. We are the U.S. distributor.
Yeah. Okay.
Which we also think is a problem.
Yeah. Yep. So here's where I think we are. You are, you've gotten a better mousetrap. Like you have figured, you have solved a problem. You've solved a real problem. You've done it with deep empathy. And it's like making the world better. So you have created something of enormous value and you should feel great about that. And the people who create are rarely the people who distribute. So that you are lamenting the fact that if you tried harder, you would be able to distribute. I just want to go ahead and let you off the hook. No, you wouldn't. If you had excess energy, it would be to create more. Your excess energy is not going to be to distribute. So I would just go ahead and I would do a constrained optimization for your business. And the constraint is you are not the distributor. So that you're distributing in the U.S., I think, is probably one of the reasons why everything is flat. Right now, and this is what Anne was getting at with you of like what's energizing and not. You're doing things that are neither energizing nor are you very good at. You knew this on the way in.
Right.
And so part of what we're going to do is give you permission to stop doing those and to partner with someone else for whom that's entirely what they do.
Can I try something?
Ahead. Yeah.
I want to try and take another swing at the summary just to put some...
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah.
Scaffolding around this a little bit. So first of all, what you're doing is really hard. The fact that you haven't succeeded wildly yet is not a reflection on your capability or the idea. But what you are doing is gathering important data around each of those things. It seems like there's appetite for this product out there. You didn't know when you started down this path. But does that feel right? You feel like there's a market at
this
point.
There is. We actually had a very interesting conversation. We were thinking, we need somebody to sell this, kind of like you're saying, that is a salesperson. So we had a conversation with someone we had found on LinkedIn who had been in sales in the rehab world. And he just very casually said, so just looking at this, and he's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I see like this as like $6 to $7 million a year in the rehab industry. And we're, you know, sitting there almost wanting to laugh because we're like, that's amazing and great that you see that, but it's like, we haven't been able to figure out how to even crack into that market, you know, but
do you have conviction that that market exists?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the experiment.
Perfect in that market.
That's the experiment. And so that experiment feels like it was wildly successful. There's a second experiment around the design of the business. Like how does this ownership structure work? Like what does this business even structurally look like? How are the incentives divided up and who does what? And you seem early in that experiment. And there's a third experiment around that's very important to you, Bree, and material to how this story plays out, which is what's the role you're going to play. There's a fair amount of work to be done to like work this one out. And do you want to do that work? Or do you want to come up with a graceful transition plan for someone else to come in and do some of this hard work? So to me, that's a third category.
Oh, no, I've definitely said from jump that I would be happy to put it in someone's hands that was a good steward of it. But what I would not be okay doing is walking away and having it disappear.
Right. Right.
Great.
That's basically my thing. I'm like, I think it's great. Somebody please go take it and make it everything that it could possibly be.
Okay. So in the meantime, you're going to have to hang in there on these operating experiments.
Right.
Right. But if we can get you to a place where you have the conviction you're not going to be doing this forever, this is a short period of time, and let's figure out how to structure the experiment to get you the learning as quickly as possible, which includes getting the right talent and human capital into the business as quickly as possible.
Or we don't think of it as a business. We think of it as a product. So what I keep thinking in my mind is, do you want to, you're building a product or do you want to build a company? And I don't get the sense that you want to build a company.
No interest in building a company.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful level of clarity.
Yeah. So I think you have done everything to get this ready, to have someone else who honors and cherishes and looks for additional products to have, to either sell to them outright or to license to them. And so if you had 100 units of energy, I would spend it on doing so. It's not a schmooze fest. This is a very targeted way of going in and finding the person who can distribute to it. And I would bet that there are clues of how to do it based on how you found the Middle East, Australia, London, Canada distributors.
What's your reaction to that?
One, I think that would be fantastic. When Francis was talking about that, we've already kind of found these people, I'm not sure we have, because when we found the person to manufacture it for us, that was somebody I met when I was teaching a workshop, actually in London. So I was teaching in London, met someone who has an equipment company and had just remembered that I met him and that he was a nice guy. And I reached out to him. The other distributors, our Canada distributor, our Australia distributor, our Europe distributors, are all distributors that are sort of sub-distributors of the person who manufactures for us. So it's basically contacts that we've made through him. So I don't know that we have those contacts.
I just want to, I want to speak to like the part of you that's holding onto the story that you keep accidentally doing these things or keep accidentally meeting these people. Like, you're doing this with gorgeous intention and are bringing a tremendous amount of vision, energy, creativity, capability, and skill to the challenge. And that first, that launch part of taking like some amorphous idea and bringing it to life in some way, that's wildly difficult to do. And you keep doing it in your life again and again and again and again. And that's a really exciting pattern. You present to me as incredibly creative, incredibly scrappy, incredibly resourceful. Like, when you see a sense of possibility, you are able to turn that possibility into something real and tangible in the world in like record time. There's a human being out there that has the answer. And you just need to use all of your creative energy and talent and problem-solving skills to find this person as quickly as you possibly can. And you have the internet at your service. You have this incredible network. You have the guy who sized your market in 30 seconds, said it's 6 million, you know, go. I'd make that your first phone call. Describe the problem, you know, how can you help? I would give you 72 hours to find a credible lead on this.
I actually think that that's the right amount of
time.
And
I bet Francis would take the under on that.
I would take the under on it.
Yeah.
Like, for you to find the credible person that's going to be 1 or at most 2 degrees of separation away. Because here's the other thing. Like, it's going to be somebody that works at Peloton, or was it Lululemon who bought the magic mirror?
And yeah,
like, schmoozing you don't want to do, but solving this, I can already just watch you. Our listeners can't see you, but I can. You are ready to go do this right now.
Okay. I can think of these people, like when you say, because I've many times written down Peloton. Like, I've written down Peloton. It's been something I've written down. But what is the way in? To have the person.
So what a great question.
So, yeah.
Now we're having the right conversation.
So you,
Francis, you know anyone at Peloton?
I do. You want to be introduced to somebody at Peloton? No problem.
I would love to be introduced to somebody at Peloton.
No problem. It will happen before today ends.
What's your next question?
Yeah.
It's sort of like trying to figure out, how do you cold call hey, you want to buy my thing? Like, because that's sort of how we feel. Like, do you want to buy this? Do you want to like just take this on? Like, wouldn't that be fun for you? Like,
yeah. So here's
how do you make that happen?
So for the framing of it is, I have an amazing invention It's been market tested. I have the prototype. I have the patent. I've done all of the things. It's now ready to
I have the devoted customers who are literally like weepy at how many problems this solves for them.
It solves so many problems for them, including the ambulation one that you're saying, which I just think is huge, and that you also get a real estate like burst out of that. It's like that, my wow.
I think
continues.
You used the word miraculous, I did, Francis, yeah. I don't think it's an understatement.
I don't think it's an understatement. So you have this thing and you are looking for a partner to blow it out. You want this to be in the hands of everyone who needs it. So you're looking for someone to partner with to do that. And that's the intention of all of your conversations. And the people will either be the partner or they'll put you one degree closer to the partner.
Okay.
And you can be open saying, I don't know what this partnership looks like. I just know that I have solved a huge problem for the marketplace. And you can be on that call at this point, super open and curious. It doesn't have to be, I have an offer for... you know, a complex financial
right.
debt swap, you know, like you can say, I'm trying to find the right structure. We have learned a tremendous amount over the last 5 years of doing this. And we have a really exciting momentum and we're looking for the right partner now.
Okay.
So I think that you want to shift away from a company to a product. And now you're looking to partner with someone or license to someone to sell this product that is a world-changing product.
Okay.
So you're not looking for a salesperson. You're not looking like none of that stuff, the social media, all of that. That's not what you want.
Bree, did we achieve the objective of this call?
I think maybe you did. You know?
Yeah.
The problem has been solved.
I'll take the bet.
So what's your next move, Bree?
Well, in 72 hours, I'm going to be asking for your contacts to reach out to, and then talking to my business partner and rehashing what we've talked about. And I'm sure she'll agree because we both kind of feel the same way, and looking for an off ramp for our sort of current involvement, which is not what either one of us want to be doing, either yeah. myself or my business partner.
And doing it with the freedom that you didn't fail here. This is the logical next chapter in the story of this idea. You know, Frances, Bree's journey, I'm going to use journey unironically, it's one of my commitments this year, makes me think of the life cycle of an idea, which I know you've spent a lot of time thinking about. I'm thinking of the Paul English case and just the work that we've done with entrepreneurs. Like this idea of where do good ideas come from? And then you're not done with the idea yeah. necessarily. And then what do you do to make sure that they can survive out in the wild?
So the Paul English view of the world is that great ideas, great innovative ideas come from annoyance. So he just is constantly looking at what annoys him.
Mm-hmm.
And if it annoys enough other people, there is an innovation waiting to happen there. So he reframes and is quite excited when he gets really annoyed.
Yeah, and it's a great example. So he essentially started Kayak, if I understand correctly, which is this great service for, you know, finding the best flight because he was deeply annoyed that he had to go, you know, airline website to airline website to solve his problem, which is how to get from here to there. And I know when you teach that case, part of the challenge to the room is to bring their annoyances into the table. And what I love about you coming home from those classes is, you know, in every class, at least one legitimate idea is born from this discussion about
astounding.
How irritated we are,
it's astounding.
By our environments.
There is an innovative idea that could end up becoming a company, and it is born from our annoyance.
And one of the things I loved about this conversation with Bree is, and you're not done.
Right.
And figuring out what your role is going to be in the life cycle of turning that idea into a product and then potentially or not into a business is actually quite a very subjective and personal trajectory.
And it's very unlikely that the person who started from the annoyance is going to be the person who brings it all the way through production, distribution, right. retailing, all of that. And in Bree's case, she had the annoyance, brought it all the way through to the product. She also tried to make the product the company, and that was probably a bridge too far. And that might have been when she needed to start to develop a team.
Yeah. One of the questions that we often ask entrepreneurs at the beginning stage of just thinking about this is, does this idea want to be a product or service? And eventually, the subsequent question is, does this product or service want to be a business? Those are two very separate questions.
Very separate.
And, you know, the third one is, then what role do I want to play at what point in this life cycle? And when you start down the path, you don't have answers to any of those questions.
Yeah.
And your job in the beginning is to answer them and get data that will inform a good answer. And that's where she is. She's just beating herself up along the way. And I think that's the opportunity. That's the emotional opportunity here, is for her to stop.
Yeah, to liberate her from the unproductive need to do that.
Self-flagellation.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you have a work problem you're feeling stuck on, send us a message. You can email fixable@ted.com, call or text 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253. We'd love to hear from you.
And consider sharing this one with a friend who's embarking on the entrepreneurial journey for the first time. Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Anne Morris.
And me, Frances Fry.
Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Banban Chang, Michelle Quint, Corey Hajim, Alejandra Salazar, and Roxanne High-Lash.
This episode was mixed by Louie at StoryYard. If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend to check us out.
And one more thing, if you can please take a second to leave us a review, it really helps us make a great show.